Wait, wait, stop. That's the one.
Welcome to Zenten Speaks, a show where I make new friends and reconnect with old ones. A show where everyone's stories may inspire you to tell your own story. In this podcast, we encourage everyone to get rid of shame, guilt, fear, doubt, and judgments for themselves and for others, and replace those with love, empathy, compassion, understanding, kindness, and to do your best in everything that you do. In essence, to get rid of things that no longer serve your well-being, to be true to yourself and be honest with others. Today we have a guest. Our guest today is husband, wife, Daniel Clark and Angela Clark. So I'm going to refer gentlemen as Den today. And I have the honor, and I'm so grateful to have you both on the platform today. So Angela, yeah, definitely. So we met on Jehovah's Witness Global Recovery Group with Den. And recently I've met also Angela through Den, because Angela's Den's wife. And so Angela is a former member of a group called Worldwide Church of God. And Angela is also an author of a book called Awakening from Unconscious Resentment. She is a musician and she's a recording artist. And along with her husband, she owns an upscale kitchen refinishing business in Idaho. She is also an ordained minister. Mm-hmm. Yes, ordained minister. And Angela's passion is to inspire others and helping them strive for a better life. And I love that passion, because that's one of the things that I always have passion about, but I've often keep it down because of religion brainwash, where I'm saying something else comes first before you. So who are you to inspire others? So as of last year, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to embrace all my gifts. So I actually appreciate that you do the same. So we can visit Angela on her website. It's angelasinspirations.com, correct?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And I'll post the link on the description below. And Daniel Clark is Angela's husband, as we mentioned. They own the business together. But he is a former Jehovah's Witness. And so Dan is a public speaker, and he is a life recovery coach. And he is the author of many books that I urge you to look for, and I'll post the note on the description below. So one of the books is The Greatest Power Known to Men is Surrender. I love that title. And the second one I'll mention is The Divine Order of Alchemy, and many other ones that I'll post a link so you can search for those. So some of these websites are The Prodigal Journeys, and he also has a Facebook and YouTube, and I'll post all of that on the description so you can see Den's journey as well as Angela's. Thank you both for being here. I appreciate you so much.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. It's nice meeting you. It's glad you told us you wanted to do an interview. That'll be fun, you know?
Yeah.
Yes, definitely.
Good thing you're doing. Very good thing you're doing.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I've seen your posts many times before, and I'm kind of someone who's online and I'm an observer, and I tend to rarely post anything because I like to observe and learn from others instead of just like talking and whatever. And so around September, I wanted to do a podcast on my own. And then in October, I was like, you know, I'm just going to do it. And why not? And I get inspired by your post. And I didn't know you had a YouTube channel until recently. And so I've been watching some of those. So thank you for your work as well.
Yeah. And you're a former Jehovah's Witness too, right?
Yes. Yes. I left 20 years ago.
That's true. 22.
Nice. Nice. All right.
Wrong for me.
Yeah.
So I think I've been out from my second cult for 18 years.
Yep.
Yeah.
18 years. Wow. It's good that we're free from those for a long time.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And then the first cult I was in until I was from birth until 22 to 20, 23, right in there. So I've been in two cults.
Yeah.
So tell us, I'm going to start with you, Angela. Tell us who you are and what brings you joy.
Okay, what brings me joy? Ooh, well, as you just read, I love music. And I did a CD album called Inspirations of Christmas. And partly because, as you know, we were not allowed to create Christmas in the Worldwide Church of God, which is the one I was brought up in. Again, half Jehovah's Witness, half Jewish. And so we operated much like Jehovah's Witness faith in every way. If you went to a service when I was growing up, you would say, oh, this is Jehovah's Witness, but it wasn't. Plain Truth Magazine is a magazine that our church put out, and we had a World Tomorrow broadcast. There was another magazine called The Good News. It was about the world tomorrow because they believe so big time in Armageddon and all the fears of the end times at any moment, any time, God is coming back. You guys called Jehovah. We called him God. Just the way we operated, trying to witness to the world before Jesus comes back, we did it through putting out magazines as opposed to going door to door. And my dad worked for the church headquarters in Pasadena, California, doing that on the presses. They had the second largest press in the world at one point. And I grew up in that church school as well. But my passion has always really been about music. And then I think secondly is encouraging other people, however that might be done. It's just always been, I think I'd say this, it's my gift to inspire and encourage. So Dan definitely has the same exact giftings, yeah. And more. And maybe even kind of an evangelistic kind of a way about us too, because we seem to always be speaking all over the place, no certain place, but anyway, music, just when I'm in the studio, I'm telling you, I'm in another world. It's like I lose track of time and I just get in the zone, and I know that's where my passion big time lies, because I feel like that's a place where I can touch. It's just automatic. It's where you can touch souls. If you come from a certain place, it's deep within me, and that deep within me place that I'm able to tap when I do music is just unbelievable. Even to me, I just love that space, and I know I'm doing something really good when I'm doing it, and I'm really particular, and I know how to bring the music together in such a way that it's absolutely like kind of magical and angelic in a way, I guess you would say, mm-hmm. The way I bring it together. And it's just a real, I recognize it as a gift from God. And so that's where my passion really lies. And then I do serve at different rescue missions. I served at a jail teaching life skills. And I love doing that too, which again, it's my opportunity to teach them how they can go from a place where life's not working to show them the tools that will help life to work. And that's encouraging. And I use lots of stories. I love storytelling. I'm always using stories to do that. And Dan does that with me working at a rescue mission in where we live here. So anyway, that's it for me, I guess.
And they really like her. She comes from her heart, because, when we are witnesses, we came from our head. We mm-hmm. came from law. This is what the Bible says, black and white. And she came from her heart. It was interesting when I observed her in the jail. Everybody was respectful of her, but they'd fall in love with her. But they were falling in love with the love within her. And it was interesting. They knew she was married. They had good boundaries, but mm-hmm. they loved the love that she had for him. And they said she was the real deal. So that was a beautiful thing.
Mm. Right. It is important to do it from your heart. Oh, I'm getting chills right now. To do anything from your heart, because then that's when you are in spirit. Like my guru, Dr. Wayne Dyer, would say, you do anything in spirit, this you're inspired, then others, you don't ever need to tell anyone what to do. They will see it and they will willingly come to light, because anything comes to light. And you were talking, I was getting goosebumps. It's like, yeah, that's amazing that you got there.
I think one or more passion I have too, and it's because of the binding of the church that we grew up in, both of us. I'm just so into helping people free from those shackles. And what I kind of realize is that always we've been taught in these different religions, and I've been in them all, and maybe not every single one in the whole world, but getting close. And what they are all doing, I notice, is that it's always about something on the outside that's going to make you happy. If you do these rules, or you follow this dogma, or you obey these laws, or something along the line of outside I'm going to call them works, because the Bible talks about that. Paul talked about it, where it's by grace and through faith, not through works, that we find the joy and the happiness and, you know, the right place with God. And they always try to say it's on the outside of us and that all happiness is found on the outside. But the truth is, nothing is really going to truly stand forever in that place of happiness. I mean, people die, they get in accidents, they let you down, they have affairs, whatever. But the true place that you, that we find is deep within us. And I can tell you that I'm still trying to get to a deep, that deeper place in a deeper way than I ever have in my whole entire life. Dan is my great, a little bit ahead of me and a beautiful thing to watch for me, but it's super important to me because right now we're going through the hardest time in life that we could ever go through. I feel as a planet, and, we're forced to tap into that place because times and different times for all of us are so difficult that we almost don't have a choice. I think it's kind of exciting. And that makes this time maybe one of the most exciting that we've ever been through, because like we're literally in the fire and we're having to go inside. So I'm like, yay, God, you know how to get us there. You know, as hard as it is, it's like, that's where we're going to find our true happiness that can't be stolen, can't be taken from us. And it brings a welling joy that they talk about in the Bible, about a place like that, where no matter what is happening, you can be beaten, you know, 39 lashes, 1 inch from your death, and yet sing with joy, so much power coming from that, that the walls of the jail fall down and, you know, everyone is changed forever. And I'm like, you know, how do they get to that place after they just got beaten an inch from their life? But there is such a place, and I'm really excited that that is interesting to me. And it's a passion of mine, and it brings me joy talking about it. So I wanted to talk about that too.
Good. Right. Yeah. And which reminds me of a book. If I remember the author correctly, I think, The Man's Search for Meaning. I think the book.
Victor Frankl. Yep.
Frankl. Yes. And so, yeah. So how about you, Dan? Who are you and what brings you joy?
Wow. What brings me joy is, can you hear me okay?
Yes.
What brings me joy, Zen, is inspiration. You know, I watched my mother die, and it always brings me to tears to think that she died in shame. She died saying, Jehovah's going to kill me. I watched her die saying those words in a mental ward. Mm-hmm. And my dad died of shame. He died thinking he wasn't enough. And it was because of the Jehovah's Witness ideology that he bought into, that when I wish to do right, I do bad. It was a failed system. And the reason it was a failed system is because it was meant to keep us dumbed down, because dumbed down people make good slaves. If you always think you're shit, if you always think you're not enough, if you always think I didn't pass out enough watchtowers, I didn't reach out, I didn't raise my kids right, then you become a good slave. And I didn't realize that. And so when I got out, 40 years I was born and raised, watching my mother die, watching my dad die of shame. After 1975, my dad's heart like just unplugged, like it ain't gonna end. It's not over. What happened? He was disillusioned. He had a split mind. You know what I'm saying? Because one part of him said, this is the truth. Just blindly believe, just follow. What's wrong with you? You're not being like those other people out there, the hundreds of thousands who left because you weren't following Jehovah sincerely, are you? And So my dad couldn't separate that. And so he died with a split mind. He died with pancreatic cancer. He lived in shame. And so he died, my mother died, my oldest brother is mentally ill, my third oldest brother is mentally shot because of waiting for a world to end. And here's the thing, here we are, the Bible says, and I hate this, that I go into most churches, and the first thing they tell you is you're a wretched sinner, you're shit. Mm-hmm. Jesus had to die for you. You know, they go and you go in and I mean, is that what you tell your kid when he's born? You're shit, you're garbage, you're this. So my passion is to take people who are dead and bring them to life. And the only way they'll be brought to life is that the spirit in me is alive. And so I pray to be a channel. I don't care if people don't like that, but a channel, a vessel, a clay. Pure through me, the Spirit of God, the Holy Spirit, the anointing, whatever you want to call it. Jesus said, these and greater things you'll do. These and greater things you'll do. Go tell that in a fundamentalist church. Go tell the pastor. The Bible said these and greater things you'll do. Oh, no. It ain't about that, Dan. Sit your butt down and worship Jesus. Well, I don't know that he wanted to be worshiped. I think he wanted us to become like him, to come into right. union with the whole Godhead. As I'm in union with the Father's in union with me, that you all would come into union with us.
That's what he prayed.
These and greater things you'll do. Don't marvel at this, right? And so I'm thinking, where did this teaching go? In fact, where did the teaching go of Jesus's life? They got him as a baby. He's the Savior. And then they got him 30 years later. He's the one we all worship. Where the right. hell did his life go? They took it out. So yep. it's my passion. And that's what I have been studying about for 20 some years. You would not believe the library. And the things that I've read, because I was going to find that missing truth. Where is that power? And I went through all facets of masonry, 32nd degree Mason, Scottish Rite, 32nd degree Knight Templar, Royal Arch, spirituality in every facet, Buddhism, Hinduism, Paramahansa Yogananda, you know, Wayne Dyer, Marianne Williamson, all those people, New Thought churches, Science
Regular
of Mind.
Church.
And I feel like I found it. And it's going to, and I put all this together. There's another book coming out called Ye Are Gods, From Prodigal Son to Divine Union. Mm. See, there was no judgment when the son left. And think about it. When they left the garden, what happened? When they walked out of the garden, God said, okay, go make your own decisions, do your own thing. And when you decide to come back, the door will be open. That's prodigal son. So there wasn't any judgment. Us being out here in the world trying to figure it all out, it was just, could we make our way back home to the union? I and the Father are one, and then operate on that. So I've had this great inspiration in my life to find that as truth, to prove that as truth, what Jesus said, these things and greater you'll do. Because I don't think God makes junk. The Bible says he yep. don't make junk. What he made was good and very good. But you know what? We got to weave through the brainwashing, the traps that are waiting to capture us, witnesses. You know, do you want to live in paradise? All you got to do is follow these eight men in Brooklyn and everything will just be, it's right around the corner, by the way. Then you find out it isn't right around the corner. You find out life goes on. But I realize the other thing is, why do all these religions, and I know I'm going on about religion, but why do all these religions talk about killing you? If you don't believe like they do, Jehovah's Witness, Christian, all of them. It's like, you're going to die. If you don't bow to Jesus, you're going to die. He's going to cut your head off. The witnesses, you know, the blood's going to be the cow's next. You're going to suffer the second death if you leave Jehovah's organization. So I'm so sick of that. I'm yeah. so sick of it. So I have studied metaphysics, esoteric, occult, everything. I shouldn't say everything because I haven't studied everything, but I've studied a lot to know, to put the pieces together. So I'm real excited. Angela's helping me with this next book, Eyewitness, or not Eyewitness, but Year Gods, From Prodigal Son to Divine Union, because that is our pathway. And when we find the union, then we speak from the union. And what we speak is not ours, but mm-hmm. the Father's. It's tongue, you might say. I don't want to say he or she, but it's tongue, it's voice.
Like Jesus said.
And it comes from the heart. And see, I think that's the thing about life, is we're shifting from here to feeling, trusting, and knowing, and loving. What is lovingness? What is that? You know, does it work up here? Does it come out of here? So I think the big shift in life is moving from head to heart. And if we get there, we'll know how to be with everybody. We'll be able to say, Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. We'll be able to operate with the same Christ mind, or the Christos,
yes.
which is what Jesus was referring to when he was talking about that anointing. It was the spiritual nature that we would want to embody. Anyway.
Yeah, because, you know, Jesus said that I only speak the words that my Father is, you know, telling me. He didn't do anything without. That's what God wants him to speak. Not one word. I really do believe that. And I want to get to that point too. You know, so in that way, it's a real union. It's not I'm God. It's that I'm surrendered to the Father and his will and his words and his way, not my own. Father, not my will, but yours be done. And that's how we got to live our lives, you know? So Dan and I are not all into, we want to be gods like that. It's just that we want to be so God-centered and so God-surrendered that God can work through us as a genuine vessel, just like Jesus. And therefore being in union as Jesus prayed that we would be. So yeah, that's really
important. Have you ever heard of Dr. David Hawkins' work, Power versus Force?
Eye of the Eye.
Yes, I heard of that name. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think I've read his books yet, but I've heard.
Yeah, he talks about. There's my will when I first leave the garden. I'm actually playing God, right? A lot of these new agers say I'm God, but we're actually playing God. But then there's a point in our life where we surrender to God. And mm-hmm. Hawkins talked about this in his book, and this is pretty cool. I remember on his scale of consciousness, 0 to 1,000, and 1,000 being Christ conscious. When we surrender to God, say, you know, your will be done in me. Your will be done. I'm kind of done with me. I've kind of went down so many dead end roads. That attractor field is over 800.
Now talk about this consciousness scale.
Yeah, Christianity stays around 2. If it's integral, it could be 2 and above if it's got some truth to it. If it's below 200, it makes you go weak on a kinesiology scale. So when you get into grief and apathy and all these things, they're down below 200 and they make you go weak. Life is hard. Life is pushing. And when you're pushing, life is pushing back. And the spiritual dimension above 200, which is integrity, I want to be whole. I don't want to continue to go on like this. I need a little help. God help me was the most powerful words that I ever spoke that changed my life, that wiped my mind out, that wiped out all the obstacles to everything that I ever wanted. Thy will be done is an attractor field of over 800. It can invoke an archangel. And Hawkins said when he was on death row, not death row, but he was in billionaire row up in New York, and he was dying of alcoholism. He prayed that prayer. And when he kinesiology tested it, he said that what turned him around and did a 180 was the glance of an archangel. So I tell people, that's the most powerful prayer you can pray.
Can I add to that?
Yeah, go ahead.
You know, it says in the Bible, just to back that up, because why would he kinesiology test that? He's trying to figure out, you know, what took notice
that's
of
how he measured that, you know.
Yeah, the truth, whether it's, you know, because it just, your body goes weak if it's a lie, and if it's the truth, you stay strong, okay? So he thought to ask, you know, was it the glance of an archangel? And it stayed strong. And so and then it hit me. It says in the Bible that the angels are looking to and fro, trying to find those whose hearts are turned towards God.
Or an opening, you know?
Uh-huh. That's what it says. The angels are always looking for someone whose hearts are turned towards God, because at any, yeah, I don't know how many on a given day or their hearts are turning towards God, but the angels are always looking to and fro for that person. So it must not be an every moment occurrence. It's kind of maybe special. And so I thought, yeah, that's biblical. That an archangel took notice of his cry. So that's kind of precious to me, you know, because the angels really do, they're really angels and they really do care about
us. And in mysticism, when you look at the where Jesus was born, it says he was born in the manger, in the low place. That's where the spiritual dimension is born, in our low place. That's why we say God's will be done. We're humbled. We've actually opened up. We're actually not operating only out of our left brain. See, we've got two hemispheres. We've got a spiritual and we've got a logic and reason, which really is sort of atheistic. That's why that thief on the cross was turning away from Jesus. And then you got the right that's faced inward, right? But Jesus said the two hemispheres, the two have to become one so that the eye can become single and the whole body can become bright. See, they don't talk about this in church. And the one that's turning away is the left brain. The left brain is playing God. It doesn't need anything. It doesn't believe that you know, all this stuff in the Bible because it's too logical. How could God let all this happen? How could all these wars be going on? How could there be a God? It edges God out. That's why they call the left brain on its own the ego. But if the two will become one, you know, I don't know. I don't know why my kid died.
Well, the other side of our brain is more spiritual. It's, you know, more apt to be connected to God. It's kind of the it's the feminine way. Women are sensitive. They're loving. It's that side of you, the creative spiritual side of you. And they're warring against each other. The Bible talks about it, how they're always warring, but they have to come together. And because you do have to have reason and logic and maybe some science in there, right? But then you've got to have the other side that balances it all out. So you have to have both. And for whatever reason, God set it up that you have to balance it out like the yin and the yang. Do you know what I mean? The left and the right, the good and the bad. You have to balance it out in the middle place. He said, the whole body becomes bright because we get to that center place.
So if you take the middle place instead of Jesus being in there and put Christ, the Christos, we're probably getting off subject here. But anyway, if you put that element in there, that's where the spiritual dimension is. It is in the heart, is in the balance, the equilibrium of the right and left brain. Anyway,
I think one thing real quick too, it's also getting into that heart place. And Dr. Greg Braden said that there's two brains in us. We have that brain up here and then we have the brain. How funny is that? To me, it's almost like that's a left brain, right brain.
Heart and mind.
That's interesting, isn't it? But that's an important brain because that's one that really that's what counts is that brain.
Probably getting off
anyway,
a little
yeah,
bit,
okay,
yeah.
Sorry.
Well, everything you're saying is very, it's knowledge. And when you know all these things, you're not going to be ignorant, like in the term of the word, of life, and therefore you're gonna be more present and mindful about yourself and your surroundings and how you treat other people and how you're not going to go out of your way to even control others.
Exactly.
Yeah, because you know all this stuff. So I can tell, like, as you're speaking, I can feel the passion. I can see it in all this stuff. Like, I can feel spirit in you because you went out of your way to learn all these things. And you're also out there to teaching others. You're servicing others because it's in service that we find joy and we're sharing all this stuff. So thank you for sharing all this stuff as well.
I feel like it's a truth that sets you free. And there's so much, we've been so brainwashed and we've also been so codependent and so tribal that how dare we step outside of those boxes. But once you do, you find out, oh my God, there's some truth. There was a guy named Philip Gardner who said, you're going to find most of your truth in probably some of the most occultic literature, spiritual literature, because the myth and allegory will teach you the truth about what's happening. Like, you know, the whole crucifixion thing is us too. That book that I wrote, Divine Order of Alchemy, is about the tabernacle in the wilderness. But instead of you bringing a goat to sacrifice, you lay on the altar. You say, I'm yours, Lord. That's the entrance into the kingdom. Then the laver was full of mirrors. That was your prayer and meditation. And it was reflecting back your imperfections as you pray. And then you were being sifted. Then you moved into selfless service. Then your selfless service kicked off the incense. And the incense was a great smell to the Lord. Then the lights came on. Then you met God in the most holy of holies within your temple.
Yeah, and this is that Jewish, that little tabernacle. And if you've read the Bible, it talks about the Jews were in the wilderness and they had this portable tabernacle. And those are the stations. One of them is the bread, the show bread, where, the bread is brought every day to that room. And then there's the lights, the candles that they light every day. All those are symbolic of what's in our bodies. You know, the light, the candles coming on. That means the different lights of understanding that God lights himself as we grow bit by bit. And the bread that we're eating, we're told to ask daily for bread, and that show bread's important. So they're all symbolic. And then going into the Holy of Holies, that's really going into that center place with God, going into the deep, the throne room of God, which we're, since Jesus died, it's my understanding, we can go there whenever we want to, if we believe. And so it's open to us. So anyway, I love it because God's leading all of this and it's really exciting. But, the churches kind of have dumbed us down to just trying to teach us that we're just good for nothing slaves, as in the Jehovah's Witnesses, and really hammer that down. And I went to a service with Dan at his brother's church in Missouri. And that was, the sermon was the answer to every question in that, not the sermon, but the thing before the sermon. The answer to every question was, oh yes, brother. Well, the answer is that we're good for nothing slaves. and what we're doing, we ought to be doing. And I'm like, what? And they kept saying this over and over again, over and over. And I'm like, oh, I think I'm going to throw up. I think I'm going to be
the watchtower. You know, they were doing that talk on we're good for nothing slaves.
Yeah, it's like, you know, hello, you know. But then I found in the Christian churches, they're telling you but you're that you're good for nothing too, because you're sinners. You're just sinners. Oh, you know, woe is me. And I wish to write this bad is present with me. Who will deliver me from this body undergoing this death? And, you know, just all this sadness around that we're losers, we're sinners, we're just waiting for Jesus to come back so we can get out of this godforsaken place. And that is what I learned, and I hate it that that's true, but they're not teaching you to be like Christ, and that is so problematic to me. But you know, Jesus tried to come and show us that this was messed up, just like the same thing. It's rules, it's wearing the garments just the same way with the tassels, and you have to eat, you know, wash your hands a certain way, all these Jewish laws, right? And it didn't get them anywhere, and they weren't growing. And here it was all this outside. Again, here we go, the outside. And Jesus was trying to get them to go on the inside and look at what's going on inside. What makes you dirty is what's coming out of, you know, from the inside out, and trying to clean that all up. And they hated him for it. They hated him for it. And you know what? When we talk about these things, trust me, people don't like to hear it, because it's just not what they've been trained to believe like. But you know what? When you get sick and tired of being sick and tired of being a piece of shit and a good for nothing slave and worth nothing and not good enough and all of that, I think you finally are led by the spirit within you to say, go looking somewhere else, because you will find me if you will just seek me. If you'll seek me, you'll find me. And so we do. And then we're ostracized, we're rejected, we're thrown out, which Dan and I have been. And, you know, it's just, I don't know. Jesus said that they did it to me, they're going to do it to you. That's what he said. And so I guess we just have to settle into that. Be it as it may, we still have to be true to ourselves, and we have to be true to our brothers to you know, when asked to share, you know, what we found and what brings you happiness. Right. And so we just share honestly. If they take it, they take it. If they don't, they don't, but we're being true to ourselves. To thine own self be true. Right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I want to help, and I so bad do, maybe too much, because that's not my business. Like, so often we're trying to play God in people's lives, and that's not our place. And, it's hard not to try to play God. It is.
But we do feel like, Zen, there's a part of people that know the truth below the mind, you know, their soul knows the truth. So we feel like sometimes if we have the courage to speak the truth from just where we know it at present, because it may change, then we're speaking to the soul. Because the main thing is that we're speaking is integrity from our heart, from our, you know, and the beautiful thing about searching and studying is you get a bigger picture. God goes from Jehovah to this, to this, to this, and it becomes so enormous. How could I ever put that in a box? I'm not going to make this God thing in my image anymore, or I'm not going to brace anyone else's image of it, because my studies have showed me it's so big, so enormous, I can just fall into it. I can be okay in the mystery. I can be okay just trusting life and trusting everything. Because I know that that force, like you said, Zen, is good. It's good. It's love. God is love. And so I just want to fall into that. And if I speak my truth, and I can talk a lot of myth and allegory, but it doesn't help. It's only if I can share it, you know, like little bits by little bits, you know, then, you know, if you have that kind of time. But I would love to share it. There's so much myth and allegory in pieces of this puzzle that come together. When I finished masonry, I'm out of masonry now. I was in it for about 4 years. And the pieces all came together. It was like all these pieces went choo, 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 choo. And I was like, oh my God, I'm free. I'm free. All the Kabbalah, all the Christian, all the everything came together. All the golden lining between them all, they all just went like that. No judgment, nothing. There's no more judgment, because everybody's doing the best they're doing. Everybody's on the same journey as me, just different places. It's like Hawkins said that, or Leland said this. There's a mountain here, right? And just because a guy sees from here doesn't mean he's better than the guy that sees from here. The guy that just sees from here just maybe not doesn't have the life experience that I have. But there's someone else who sees up here, who sees the quantum field. And there's someone here who sees the fifth level and the sixth level. So I'm like, you know.
That was Leland. That was Leland Kaiser, by the way. Dr. Leland Kaiser out of Colorado.
So when you understand that, you can allow others to be right where they're at.
Yes, yes.
And that's freeing for them and you, right?
That amazed me what we'll do when we're desperate to find that place. I mean, Dan went into no man's land where no man should ever go. I mean, you know what I mean? To go into masonry to try to find this secrets. Mm-hmm. I mean, you'll go anywhere when you're desperate enough to go. And I mean, he went and he's the better for it. Trust me.
I've risked losing my wife, everything, family.
Family. It didn't they end were at, upset.
I'll
they
tell
were
you what, upset. It didn't end at witnesses. I mean, trust me, the witnesses, I mean, her mother, you know, same thing. I'm going to rip them two apart. If I could get my hands on my daughter, she's coming home. Daddy, she's coming home. My baby daughter's coming home. I was, you know, wicked. I was reading the wrong books. But you will search for that. You'll give up everything. The Bible says you'll give up everything to go search for that pearl of great price. Mm-hmm. And when you find it, you know, you don't need anything else, you know?
Yes, Dan, so, that's right. Anyway. It was just amazing to watch it. And then get what he wanted out of it. So God did, you know, because I was praying about it and I feel like God told me in my heart that, you know, he's got to go down this road. And so I'm like, oh, okay. You know, so here he went and be a Mason. And, but it ended up that he got what he was searching for and, already knew a lot of the secrets already. He didn't realize it, but he found a lot more. And so it's kind of amazing. You'll find in the most darndest places, like some writings from the Mormons, there's the writings that, are very, very deep. And, but you know, you'll go anywhere to search for the truth.
And your attitude is always, thank you.
Yes.
Thank you. Yes. You know, yes. For everything. Like I know you had that in the beginning, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's
exciting. Yes, certainly. And I've noticed one thing within me and people like you that I spoken to, that when you in that humble place, you want to learn and you want to serve others. You're not even caring about telling people what to do, telling them they're evil, they don't believe in this, they're going to go to hell and all this stuff. As you mentioned, they're at a place and you respect that. And then everyone has their own time and their own ways of doing things. And you respect it and you love it and you move on. And they get inspired by watching you. And when they're ready, they might join you or even hear you out. And people who are insecure about what they're teaching, who doesn't know, I was having an interview earlier, how we were saying how, because we were going to field service and teaching a bunch of shit we didn't know anything about. And we were condemning people over it. But once we're out willingly, or got kicked out, we didn't care to go in telling people, hey, do this, do that, whatever. We'll tell our stories if they want to hear it and we'll make a video, but we weren't bashing anyone's head because we got into that space of understanding of like, okay, everyone's going to be where they're at and we respect everybody because no one is greater than the other. And so I'm glad to gotten rid of that arrogance and that ignorance from being Jehovah's Witness.
Yeah.
Oh God.
A lot better place.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. It's nice to love everybody wherever you go, no matter what religion or what belief system that they have. You know what I mean?
You never even try to fix them, really. I mean, if I go into a Christian church or something and they tell me they believe in Jesus, God bless you. You know, I don't argue with them and tell them all my esoteric stuff, you know?
Yeah. Maybe just a few little things we're passionate about.
Yeah. Or if they challenge me, you know, if they do challenge me and say, you know, you need to find a church. I say, well, I am the church. According to Paul, I'm the church. I'm the temple. You know, so if they challenge me or tell me to take a seat in their church and shut up, then we have a little different story. But if they leave me alone, I leave them alone. We don't have to. I know, like you said, Zen, they're where they're at. And I was where I was at when I was witnessing. I was preaching fervently. And when I got into the science of mind, I was, oh, my God, I found it. And then got into the mysticism and other things. Then it got bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And then I stopped knowing. I was okay with not knowing. I was okay not knowing absolutely. And I realized in not knowing absolutely that I could actually hear and learn more.
Yes.
Once your belief systems are set, the quantum field stops. I chose the Volkswagen. That's it. It's the only car. It's about everything else just kind of vanishes. The Chevrolet, the Cadillac. But if you just stay open, you kind of know what you know, but you say, but yet I don't know. I know at this point in my life where I think I know, and it sounds pretty good, and I think I've got the pieces together, but I'm open for more. And here, that's a sign. of a person who's really spiritual and who wants the truth that sets them free, you won't be defending even your beliefs. You'll be like, right. Tell me something new. I want to get, yes. Maybe I've got another veil on my eye. I want to see a little clearer.
I got to tell you something that happened to me when I was at this church with Dan. I was at a Unity church in Boulder with Dan. And we were standing, waiting in this long line for some important service. And we're just talking. And Dan says, Angela, can't you just, be okay in the mystery? You know, do you have to know all the answers to everything? You have to figure everything out, just everything in a nice, neat little package, you know? And I said, yeah, I do need to know. And then he goes, well, why can't you just be okay in the mystery? Like, you don't have to know. Couldn't you just be okay in a place like that? You just relax. And so I was upset about that. And I really thought about it. And I thought, you know what? That would be a beautiful place to be. It's like being on the back of that tandem bicycle where somebody's taking you. You don't really know where you're going, but you know you're okay because that person's real responsible and you're just going along freely. Don't know where you're going, but you're okay to be there. And because you know everything's as it should be. And I thought, oh my gosh, that would be so wonderful. And I really, really did let go in a tremendous way that I don't have to know the answers to everything anymore. It's okay to be in the mystery. You know, I mean, how could we possibly really ever know? Because you know, when you read a book, right, that's that person's perspective. And you're just blindly going to trust that they know what they're talking about. It's book after book, research after research. How do you know that you know that you know that that guy got it right when he was in that country looking at those statues or whatever it was that he came up with? How do you know that he got it right, that he interpreted it right? That you do know what I'm saying? It's like you're trusting all the time people that are telling you things that you read about, like blindly, honestly. And so can't you just relax a little bit and just admit that you don't know and you don't have to know? What if I'm wrong? So what? Right? So what? It's like we're loved. That's the most important thing that we want to know, is does God love me or not? And who was it, Einstein, that said that the most important decision you're ever going to make, he said, is to decide whether the universe and God are for you or against you. And so I still have to remind myself, okay, is God and the universe, which means all creation, all the angels, all the trees, the animals, everything that God made are for me, and God and Jesus, they're all for me. But the world, okay, maybe not. Okay, so that's okay. But am I alone here in this world, this crazy, crazy, crazy world? Or do I trust that there is this wonderful God that absolutely loves me, knows everything about me, knows the very hairs on my head, knows every thought I think, knows where I am at all times, when I rise, when I lay down, all of it. And he's going to care for me like he promised, and all of his angels and emissaries are there for me and working on my behalf? Or am I going to believe that I'm alone in this crazy, crazy world, all alone? And he said, that's the most important decision you could ever make. And I have to re-remind myself when I get freaking out about anything, is this true or not? And then that other scripture that says that he who comes to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. So we trust that if we diligently seek him and we believe that he is, then he's going to reward us. He's going to take care of whatever it is. And if we diligently seek him, so we just know that all we have to do is diligently seek God, and that we believe that he is, that's all we got to do. And if we do that, everything's going to fall into place. And so that kind of goes along with Einstein's thing that, you know, you just make up your mind. I believe that God loves me. I believe that he's for me and not against me. And that is not like the witnesses told us, nor the worldwide. God is always angry about something. We're never doing things exactly right. And we're always not enough. And you're always worrying about, you know, when Jehovah comes back, am I going to be, you know, am I going to be considered good enough to be in the paradise? You know what I mean? Just always worry in the back of your mind, what if I'm not good enough? Oh, you know, we got to be done with that. You know what I mean?
Something too, Zen, those books that you were talking about in the beginning, before they were ever written, I told God, if you're real, I don't want to hear about Paul. I don't want to hear about John in the Bible. I don't want to hear about this. I don't want to hear about all these people that are doing all these amazing things. It was like, if you can touch my life and change it from alcoholism, all the things I went through, being a drunk, sex addicted, all these things. I said, I'll write about you. And he did. And every one of those books aren't bullshit. They're real testimonies. The first one I witnessed, the shocking insider story of Jehovah's Witnesses, that was all about my exiting, listening to my inner GPS. Why am I pissed off? What's wrong? What's going on? And tapping in to something that God put in me to direct me out of there. And then I wrote about surrender. I had a massive surrendered state that I entered into, which I was talking about David Hawkins at 850 on a conscious scale.
Right.
I surrendered into something much bigger than me and my whole world changed. So I wrote about it in Surrender, Your Key to the Kingdom Within. And then I saw the big picture, Divine Order of Alchemy, The Ancient Secret to Union with God. That's a massive picture of the whole infrastructure that came together. And so it's like a tapestry of my walk to freedom out of there, but it's experiential. It's real. Nothing is fabricated. It's there. The miracles that happened, the art, when I could all of a sudden paint. I didn't know I could paint beautiful pictures. That's a whole story in itself. And on and on and on, having a business, you know, praying to God. I've never had a vacation, Lord. I've never been able to take vacation. I work my ass off. I work, you know, 6 days a week. I work for creeps. I'm tired of this. God gives me my own business. Puts a guy in my life, a friend in my life that tells me you should be making $1,000 a day. You know, it's a long story, but anyway, I wasn't making that much. I was making like 50 grand a year. And I called the guy an angel. He's in a DVD that we made. What was it called? Oh, Grace by Miracles, Prospering in Times of Uncertainty. And I talk about this guy who came in. It was right after prayer saying, God, I work like this. I slave for these owners. I do this. I do that. I don't get to see my kids. My wife left. I don't have no money, blah, blah. After that, I met that guy. I meet Angela. He was a catalyst for me meeting Angela. We started a business. And for 5 years, this guy said, you should be making $1,000 a day, not $1,000 a week. You should be making $1,000 a day. For the next 5 years, we made $1,000 to $3,000 a day. A day. This is a real story.
Yeah.
And I tell people, they say, oh, you tell me you pray to someone out there. You mean you still do that? You don't know about the spirit? I know about all that stuff. I know about the science of minds. I know about the unity. I know about all the, I'm God. And I came back to, yes, we did commune with something out there, but something out there communed with me in here. And tell them about our house. I mean, it's a weird thing. Tell them about Which our house. One? This one. Tell them what happened. This is weird.
All right. So
we're can we tell you this? Is this okay?
Oh yeah, totally. I love it.
Okay. You're gonna love this one.
So we're living in a rental home in Idaho. And our intent was to go back to Colorado as soon as we helped our daughters to kind of get off the ground, being young teenagers, going through teenage years, right? But then when that time came where we felt like maybe we could. Colorado was not even a possibility anymore for various reasons. So we're like, okay, we got to buy a place. So we started looking and we are not finding it. And not only that, but every offer we tell God what we want. And so I was kind of presumptuous because I know that the house I lived in the mountains when I raised my children, I had mountains and I had serenity. I had beauty and I had all these, I had well, septic, wood stove. And I liked the fact that I was independent. You know, I had these things that if anything got weird or strange, I'm sufficient, right? So I asked God, please, could I have a well? I miss my quality water, Lord. I don't like this horrible city water. And please, like, I need a garage that's separated from the house because Dan sprays sometimes and it comes in the house and I can't stand it. And I need a separated garage. And Lord, you know, I really miss my wood stove. I like to be independent that way and know that we could have heat if we need it. And please, could I have a wood stove? And then I asked for a beautiful view in my living room so that I could feel like the outside was in, because that's how I had it in the mountains. And I miss that. I feel close to God when I have that. And then I said, and please, Lord, could I have a water source? Because that just makes me feel, I had a pond when I was in the mountains that we built and I could look out and see the water running and hear it running. That also brought peace to me. So I said, please, could I have water, Lord? You know, I just want something beautiful that brings me close to you. So Dan's like, oh man, Angela, this is just ridiculous. You're asking for way too much.
I'm like, oh dear. Well, oh
so,
God.
So, yeah. we're not finding it, right? We'd find maybe the water, but then not the views or
deals, you know, are falling through.
Right. We write offers. They're not happening anyway. And they're still not everything we want. They're just partially. And I'm like, oh man. And so anyway, we finally said, you know what? This is what we're going to do. We're going to wait till fall. And then we're going to try one more time. And if we don't find it, we're going to go to Michigan. And we know we can find it in Michigan and right price and everything. And it won't be these wars, these price wars and all this. So then my sister calls and says, hey, Angela, I found two of my homes on Craigslist. And I'm like, Craigslist?
Now, here's the cues you listen to after you pray. You look for you know, cues,
yeah,
right?
So, yeah, because we're praying, right, and saying, God, you know, we'll just wait. You know, I know we'll find it in Michigan. I know we'll find exactly what we want if we don't find it in the fall. Then we just said this. My sister tells me this Craigslist thing. And oh, if anybody knows, I'm sure everybody knows, you don't go finding your house on Craigslist. You have high priced sellers that are really not motivated to sell. And so, but guess what? Dan's like, okay, fine. I'll get on Craigslist. So he did. And he found this house that we're in right now. And it is crazy because it's in our price range that we could afford, which was not where it needed to be for the kind of thing I'm asking for. But yeah,
in Boise, this was like would have to be a $700,000-$800,000 house in Boise to be on the river, Boise River, where we're at.
Yeah, so it was an older home, but well built, solid, in good maintenance, and it has a really big, huge Boise River running right down. It looks like it's in your backyard. Big window when you step into our house,
all glass.
You just like, oh, and it's just stunning. There's the water. It looks like it's right outside your window. All glass, all beauty, And so then we got the wood stove and we got a beautiful fireplace. It's crazy, weird,
all
beautiful.
Petrified stone.
Uh-huh, wood. Petrified wood stone on it. And then we got the garage separated. We got the, what did I ask for? The wood stove, the septic. And I got a train noise, which I forgot to ask for. I love the train sound,
yep.
Just perfect amount of it. And I seem like there was one other thing, but I can't think. So the water source, the picture, the outside feeling like it's in. Yeah, all of it. Every single thing, so God did not forget. One detail.
So that's what's interesting.
And in our price
something,
range.
Something heard the affirmation. Something heard every word. Every word. It was the separated garage. We couldn't believe it. We're like, the outside's fully glass, the whole back of the house. We're like, now I got my shop out here. Now we got a glass chapel out here where we kind of just commune, you know, kind of just sit and drink coffee and, you know, meditate.
Yeah.
But it's like something heard every word.
Yeah.
The spoken word is coming from us. I think it's God speaking through us.
And the thing is, that it was a ridiculous asking. I'll tell you why, because our price range was $221,000. And you know, where are you going to find all of that for $221,000? That is what we
and
found.
You know, the beauty of it.
That's
now it's
crazy.
Worth about 650. Just a couple years later, it's worth like 650. Yeah. And so we could retire.
Four years
I mean,
later.
We could literally just sell it, retire, and have money left over. And so see, it's like the spiritual dimension that mm-hmm. we're trying to encase will take us from glory to greater glory. I know that sounds maybe religious, but it takes us from good to more good, to more good, to more homeostasis, to more peace, to more lovingness. It completely makes you totally new and opens up doors that never could be opened. We got a movie we're affirming next. We're affirming a big movie, our Jehovah's Witness, kind of a short bit about our being a Jehovah's Witness, and then our walk out, and then how when we left those belief systems, when we dared to die to that infrastructure, the inner temple, when we said, just take this temple and rebuild my temple, built on the spirit of truth, took us from glory to greater glory. So we're going to do a movie. We're going to do a motion picture. We've already had it twice, almost. COVID killed it twice. But we got a picture coming, a movie, a motion picture coming of a real transformation of a real living spirit that's here now that wants to, what would you call it, possess us. It wants to possess us if we'll let it, if we'll allow the beliefs, you know, if we'll allow ourselves, if we'll make room for this divinity. A lot of times, like we say that, you know, they talk about the book, you know, your pages are full. If your pages of your book are full, there's no room. Mm-hmm. You're edging God out. So again, staying in that neutral place, that open space, I'm telling you, anything can happen to anybody. And I have seen it happen more than once. We have talked these truths that we're talking here with other people. And we have seen, I saw a guy and I talked about this surrendered state. It's in that book, Surrender. And that man ended up moving. He lost everything. It was a long story, but he ended up moving up in the hills in Snowmass, one of the most beautiful areas. He plays with the most beautiful musicians. I could tell you story after story of people who've accessed that 800, that attractor field that moves opticals. Anyway,
I need to get there 100%. And this is proof. Your story is proof to yourself that these things are possible. And I had many things within me around when I left Jehovah's Witness at 19 and a half. And around that time, maybe 16 to then, I felt like when you're talking about all the shame and all the being a sinner, all this stuff, I didn't believe any of this stuff. I felt like I was the son of God and Jesus is my brother or whatever. And I was in the same alignment as them, but of course I couldn't voice it. So the only way, another thing too with me, I don't like to argue. I will hear someone's thoughts. And if I disagree, then it's fine because they have their thought and I have mine and I don't need to butt heads with them. So what I did is as soon as I could leave, I just left. I never went back. I just left. I know who I was and what I wanted. And I was just like, this is not for me anymore. And I never looked back. And so as you were talking about, and later on in life, as I was learning more about spirituality, all these laws of attraction or whatever, I did realize that I live in New York City. A lot of my friends or family were telling me fears like, don't move to New York, it's expensive or it's dangerous, Times Square and all this stuff. And I said, all these things are fable because I'm the son of God. And I don't believe of good or bad. If anything, I believe of good, but I don't believe bad things will happen to me. I believe that things will happen to help me grow. So therefore, why should I be afraid about growth?
That's so good, Jen.
That is so good.
Yeah. And really, so
I want to say one thing. Don't you think it's important that when we ask for anything, that it's like you don't want to have a wrong intention about it. Like, you know, if your intention was to be better than my neighbor or to compete with them anyway, or because I want to be rich and famous or some sick thing like that, it's like, don't even bother asking, you know. But I did have a pure intention in asking for what I wanted, because there were real reasons why I needed all of those things. And they were honest, you know what I mean? Yes. And so I don't know, for whatever reason, I guess maybe God wanted me to know that he does hear every single word of our prayers. He just wanted us to know that. And so he delivered exactly. And we weren't asking amiss, like, apparently, because he did give it to us. And he says, if you ask anything according to his will, then he hears you. And if you know that he hears you, you know, you have whatever you asked of him in prayer, quote unquote. And so we didn't ask out of his will, apparently, because he gave us exactly the our hearts. So man, I'll tell you, what a kind God. That's what made us feel like, oh my gosh, and melt your heart, like, man, God is really kind and he really does care about the details. Wow. And even what you forget to ask, you know, he says more than you can ask or imagine, you know, and more than you asked for. And I feel like he did. And the train noise, I mean, you know, extra good views. And I just feel like he does hear our prayers. He does. He hears every single last word.
And we never thought we'd be writing books or making movies or traveling or having money or business. I never did. You know, we thought it was going to be over. I was heavily into the 75. So I never, ever thought I was anything more than junk. I graduated with a D-minus average. I could barely read when I left high school. I didn't care. My dad preached the world was going to end. So I'd literally go into class, put my head down, and they'd say, just show up for class and don't disturb the class and we'll pass you. That's the way it was in the Detroit area. And so that's how I went through school. There was nothing to live for. I wasn't going to even drive. You know, 77s when I graduated. So it was like, I'm not even going to drive. And so when I broke away, that's when everything changed. But I forget why I was saying that.
Asking God for whatever, you know, what you want. Oh, that you said that you didn't ever dream of going on vacations.
Yeah, I never dreamed. We never went on vacations. I never had a vacation, a real vacation in my life, you know, and, you know, we were just slaves of Watchtower. So that's why we're so passionate about now with connecting to me, for me. And I do it if there's an opening. I'm like you say, Zen, if there's not an opening, I don't go there. If everybody, you know, if somebody's happy where they're at, God bless them. It's none of my business. But if I see someone suffering, we have a radio show called Heart to Heart that we do every other week. And it's like when people come on, I want to validate them. I want to say, I hear you. I feel your pain. And there's life after. And that's what a great teacher told me. I understand you, Dan. I feel your pain. I feel your hurt. but do you want to get better? Do you want to stay here? Do you, I want to get better. I want to be like you. I want to have a nice home and I want to have a blah, blah, blah. And I want to be somebody. I want to be, there's something in me that's bigger than me. That's calling to me. We're made in God's image. How big could we be? We're a universe. Really? This is a universe. Just talk to different people. You know, the only thing that, that clamps you down or me down is limiting beliefs.
Yes. 100%.
And lack of dreaming.
We're
lack
infinite.
Of dreaming and imagination. You know, that's one thing that I've been
to witnesses. Hard time, didn't I?
Yeah. Dan said to me several times, Angela, you know, you imagine all this stuff. He goes, I don't know why, but I can't imagine. Well, I realize now that he really did, because he had these a few dreams, like writing a book and, you know, some traveling, you know, this, he did have some dreams, but his imagination was really shut down. He couldn't imagine. I don't know what was stuck about it, but he said he would struggle to dream and imagine. And I think, wow, to think that a religion could shut you down that hard and fast that you don't even have dreams. It was
the only thing to hope for was paradise.
Soon, yeah, you know? I was just going to say that. You know, so that's all you could think of, like what paradise
maybe
might be.
I wanted to tell Zen something. You know, have you ever heard of inner child journey? Have you ever heard of anything like that?